Self-driving cars, are they the road to the future or pie in the sky? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. You may not have noticed, I certainly hadn't, but when we weren't paying attention, Florida became a hotbed for driverless car technology. The self-driving vehicle is moving from the Jetsons to a road near you. And things are moving fast. I took a trip to Florida Polytechnic University recently, where students are only a couple of weeks into a brand new class that teaches the basics of building an autonomous vehicle. Dr. Dean Bushy is the professor piloting the new Autonomous Systems and Self-Driving Vehicles class at Florida Polytechnic University. When his cell phone rings during an interview, the theme from I Dream of Jeannie hints at Bushy's recent Air Force career. The retired colonel has a doctorate in computer science and a background in drones, and he says now is the perfect time for a course like this.
If I wanted to, every weekend I could go to an autonomous vehicles conference somewhere in some city in the United States. It's such a hot topic right now.
I'm meeting with Dr. Bushy in the lab that his students share with the cybersecurity department. The sunny room looks out over the water that encircles Florida Poly's otherworldly innovation science and technology building. 20-year-old sophomore Max Cowan joins us.
Now, this is your skateboard. There's nothing autonomous about it, right?
No, that is my longboard. It's push-powered, my feet.
Max is one of the 24 students taking the semester-long course. He's excited about the future of self-driving cars.
I think around 2035, when it is a widely adopted technology, that we're going to look back on this era of driving our own cars as silly. We could avoid so much death and so much pain with everybody using a self-driving car. Eliminating human error is a big deal for any industry, and automating driving would be a huge deal.
The students will take baby steps toward that goal of autonomy. They'll engineer their yard-long cars to drive in a straight line, make turns, and avoid obstacles with no outside guidance. A small team of students will work on each car.
Yeah, it's got little rubber wheels, it's got shocks, it's got Ackerman three-point steering right here, you can see.
For the final exam, Bushy will set up a mini Grand Prix course down the hallway, and the cars will race each other autonomously. The autonomous vehicle class is launching just as the university prepares to break ground on SunTrax. Bushy says that Florida Poly is partnering with the Florida Department of Transportation on this new facility, which will test tolling and self-driving technology.
You know, I've got big visions. We potentially could team up with an automobile manufacturer downtown, and we could actually bring a car out here, and the kids could actually put together an autonomous vehicle, not just a 1/10 scale model. They could figure out all the components that go into building a car. But that's dreaming big, obviously.
Because it's an emerging technology, there's no well-established model on which to base the course. Florida Poly is working with MIT in Boston to co-teach the class.
I went up and visited NOIT. They've taught this course for 2 semesters now, and they also have a summer course.
So new for MIT. 2 semesters.
There is hardly any university that offers a degree or a program in autonomous vehicles. It's brand new.
It may be new, but the enthusiasm for autonomous vehicles among its proponents knows no bounds. Bushy admits there will be societal shifts, unintended consequences, threats to privacy, but he says the benefits far outweigh the risks.
This is a big deal as far as safety, accidents, traffic, transportation. This is a game changer.
For Florida Matters, I'm Robin Sussingham. Here in the studio to talk about the promise and the perils of automated vehicles is State Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican from St. Petersburg, who has introduced laws that have made Florida the most welcoming place for self-driving cars in the country. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And Paul Steinman is the Secretary for District 7 of the Florida Department of Transportation, which includes St. Petersburg, Tampa, and Clearwater. Secretary Steinman, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you for having me.
Senator Brandis, so we already have a vehicle that you don't have to drive yourself. It's called Taking the Bus. And, you know, this isn't really a joke because the Florida Department of Transportation website shows that Floridians are increasingly choosing non-automobile ways of getting around. So why do you feel like this self-driving autonomous technology is such an important technology to develop right now?
So a couple things. I think it's an interesting fact that our cars are only used about 4% of the day. And so I think we're moving away from selling units of cars and moving towards selling miles. We know that in the world, there's about 10 trillion miles driven any given year. That's an amazing amount of miles. And so you're seeing major auto manufacturers, Silicon Valley firms like Google and Apple and Uber all rushing into this autonomous vehicle space just to get a fraction of those miles driven. And one way that we're going to get the price of miles down is to be able to share these vehicles. So the opportunity for us to increase efficiency, lower cost, and radically increase safety really has never presented itself like it has with this kind of shared autonomous world. And that's why everybody is spending billions of dollars in research and development to focus in on getting a small fraction of the total miles driven in the world.
Now, you sponsored some legislation in the last session last year that supposedly has made Florida very, very the most welcoming state for this technology. Could you summarize that a little bit?
Right. We simply said if you have a driver's license, you can operate an autonomous vehicle in Florida. Which is pretty much a game changer. And what we think is the right policy or moving towards the right policy, I think eventually we'll actually take away the driver's license requirement.
And so you can put a child in there.
Well, I mean, I think if you say if you can operate the Uber app, you should be able to operate a self-driving car app. That's the world of 2035, 2040 that we're quickly moving towards.
Speaking of the shared vehicles and Uber, Uber's already in Pittsburgh with this experiment where they're sending driverless cars to customers when they call for Uber. Joining us from California, let's bring in Nidhi Kalra. She's a senior information scientist with the RAND Corporation. Nidhi, are you familiar with that Uber project?
I am. I spent a lot of time in Pittsburgh during grad school, so I am familiar with both the project and the city.
How's that going?
Well, it's going pretty well. The thing to remember, though, is that there is a trained Uber driver behind the wheel ready to take over in case something goes wrong. So it's a chance for the public to experience what it's like to be driven around by a robot while still having the safety of a human.
Secretary Paul Steinman, let's take a step back. Okay, so Florida right now is the only state that explicitly allows for true self-driving vehicles. So that means that driverless cars could be on the roads with us now. So how is that safe?
Any vehicle on the roadway today still has a driver behind it. As the Uber conversation you were talking about with Pittsburgh, if something where the computer gets confused or it goes wrong, they're there to take over the vehicle and make sure that it can operate safely. So it's not as though we have the true Jetsons vehicle that is on the roadway yet where there's no steering wheel and the like. But that's actually coming to a street near you, because here in Tampa, the department has funded a pilot project to have autonomous buses, or little shuttles, that's going to run on the Marion Transitway that will literally have no steering wheel. You'll get in, and it will move up and down the Marion Transitway in downtown Tampa, and it probably will happen sometime later this fall.
And what is the advantage of that over having a bus driver?
Well, number one, it's a lot more efficient. How often do you see the buses going up and down the street? They're nearly empty. So these little shuttles only hold 12 people. So when they're moving up and down the Marion Transitway, you'll have better utilization. Two, it's more timely from the standpoint that you'll have better headways for folks to use that. Three, why we're doing the pilot is to try to help introduce people to the technology in a very safe, controlled manner so that the general public can actually see, feel, and use this here in the Tampa
area. Get people used to it.
Well, exactly. You do at some point have to test it out amongst the general population. And what we're looking for is opportunities to do that as Florida DOT, specifically with the very liberal laws that we have, that we can actually really do test that and do it in a very controlled environment so we can ensure safety for all involved.
Nidhi, Secretary Paul Steinman mentioned that right now they have to have a driver behind the wheel, so it's not truly autonomous, the cars that might be going down the highway. But even with a driver behind the wheel, isn't that the most dangerous part? For instance, airplanes right now have autopilot, but the pilot can take over in the event of emergency. And that's the idea with these cars right now. But in that split second of that turnover, if the driver's texting or has relaxed or isn't paying attention, isn't that a dangerous time?
You know, it is. A lot of people are concerned that that's what's sometimes called level three driving, and that sharing is really this dangerous valley, if you will. You know, you can be safer when the human is entirely in control, or safer when the, you know, sort of robot is entirely in control. But when that shared control takes place, that's where it gets difficult. And the analogy has been made to aviation, where pilots sometimes have difficulty taking over control from an autopilot system because they haven't had the situational awareness. So it is dicey. And contrast that with sort of the other way of looking at it, which is where the person is in control and the technology steps in the case of a problem. That's actually has been shown to be a lot sort of safer and more reliable because the technology is stepping in, but the person has control. So there is a concern about that. And actually several automakers have said they're going to skip that kind of a model of autonomous vehicle and go straight into the case where no human intervention is required because of those safety concerns.
So, Senator Brandis, have you been in a self-driving vehicle?
I've been in a number of them.
So this is pretty foreign to most of us. So describe what it's like.
I usually describe it as you're kind of terrified the first minute, you're interested the next five, and then you're bored the rest of your life.
Were you sitting in the back seat?
No, I was sitting in the front seat. Last year I was in California, and I did the Audi test traffic experience with autonomous vehicles. So I did 120 miles around the test track with nobody behind the wheel. Obviously, driving a race car is different than how we drive on a normal day-to-day basis, but I've been in those. I was in Pittsburgh a few months ago, so I've been in the Uber car up in Pittsburgh.
What was it like driving through downtown Pittsburgh?
Well, I mean, it's a really interesting experience. The user experience from the back seat was incredible, and it's exciting to see because Pittsburgh is narrow roads. There's people dashing in and out. There's bicyclists. And so this is kind of dealing with all of those different variables.
And so it would break if somebody dashed out in front of you. It would put on the brakes. And
the bicyclist, it would move over a little bit. If we got too close to another vehicle, like a semi-tractor trailer, it would move over in the lane a little bit.
So it looks like there's like a big sort of a radar thing on the roof with cameras and
right.
What does it look like?
Yeah, they have on top of it, there's an assembled piece up on top that has radars, that has different cameras installed in it. Different auto manufacturers are using different technologies. So in for example, in Tesla's, it's heavily camera-based, but in Google's vehicles, it's more radar-based and also has some cameras as well. There's kind of these hybrid models that are coming out. I think the exciting thing is you're seeing all these different varieties of technology really coming together with.
So there's a lot of competition out there.
Yeah, there's.
And that's helping.
That's exactly right. You know, Tesla's now got their new vehicles are on the road, and essentially they're all coming out with this technology kind of installed in it, or the cameras all installed in it. And even just overnight, they're installing new features in these vehicles to make them more autonomous.
Well, how much do those Teslas cost with the autonomous? Are they like $150,000?
Well, I mean, the high-end ones are $150,000. I think you can get into them for $80,000. But I think the exciting thing is you have these vehicles that are out there today that people can experience. And long-term, as we move towards more shared vehicles, we think they could get the price of a mile down, because it's important that we talk about miles of travel, down to like 20 cents a mile, and which would be cheaper than we've ever been able to move people in the history of time.
Mm-hmm. Cheaper than a cab, I guess.
Absolutely. A lot cheaper than a cab.
This is Florida Matters, and we're talking about the fast-moving technology of driverless cars and their development in Tampa Bay. We're speaking to State Senator Jeff Brandis, a big proponent of self-driving cars and sponsor of legislation that encourages the technology in the state. Nidhi Kalra, a senior information scientist with the RAND Corporation, who's been looking at this emerging technology. And Paul Steinman, Secretary of District 7 with the Florida Department of Transportation. I'm Robin Sessingham. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters, and we're talking about the genesis of self-driving cars in Florida. Nidhi, what keeps you up at night as far as these autonomous vehicles?
You know, it's two things. One is, again, the safety, because what we're really missing right now is a way to prove that the technology is safe. And we also, as a society, don't agree about how safe they should be before they're allowed on the road for consumer use. So there's a problem. It's like saying, well, what is the test that autonomous vehicles need to take before they're allowed on the road, and what constitutes a passing grade? And both of these things are open questions. And my feeling is that people are going to want to get into an autonomous vehicle before either of those two questions are answered because of the enormous benefits to mobility and transportation and the potential benefits for safety. So that's a question that I keep wondering about. And the other is, how is it going to change our lives? How is it going to change our cities? Because there's two, I see sort of two ways this could go. One is that we do have a shared economy. We are driving more efficiently. We have better mobility, you know, at lower cost, you know, less pollution, better use of our roadways. The other is that if someone can sit in a vehicle and do something for a really long time, maybe they want a bigger vehicle to do different things. Maybe they're very happy to sit in traffic for 4 hours because, hey, what difference does it make? They can work while they do it. So there's this other possibility that this actually adds to urban sprawl, decreases our efficiency. If we are concerned about single occupancy vehicles, like vehicles designed for four that seat one, will we have vehicles designed for four that seat zero? So that's the other thing I wonder about is where really will this take us, and how are we going to use and design autonomous vehicles to increase our mobility and efficiency or to decrease it?
And just to go on from that, I wonder, well, what's going to happen to us, humans, when these robo-cars take over? You know, what about our driving skills? And what about our spatial orientation skills? What about our ability to rely on ourselves?
Absolutely. But increased mobility for seniors and understanding that 94% of all accidents are caused by human error. I think that, if you want to reduce accidents in the state of Florida, we lost 2,500 people in car accidents last year. If you want to reduce accidents, the number one way we can do that is take human drivers out of the area and reduce the human error aspect of driving. But I think your questions about how it's going to affect cities is one that we aren't spending enough time on, because you're going to change radically how cities operate. For example, you don't need parking garages in an area where you have shared autonomous vehicles, because there's no reason for the cars to park. They're going out and picking somebody else up.
I see. I mean, part of your vision is that these are shared. But I don't see why you think that is going to happen, because Americans have never shown any inclination to share their cars or share driving. It's hard to get them to carpool and use the HOV lane. People like their own car. They like their parking spot. They like to come and go when they please. So why are you thinking that this is going to happen?
So I think the interesting thing is, if you use just Uber Pool as an example, 50% of all Uber's rides in San Francisco right now are on the Uber Pool platform. So people are sharing. They want it. They want a low-cost option.
Is it a certain generation or a certain age group that's
doing
this?
Well, I mean, all I know is that 50% of their trips are done that way. But the second thing is, when we stop thinking about having to drive, we have to start thinking about the user experience once we're in the vehicles, with watching videos, with being on FaceTime. We're giving people back millions and millions of hours of collective humanity that's spinning here driving down the roads every day on these 10 trillion miles. Now we're recapturing that time.
I hear you, and I think that that's a compelling argument, but people could use that time on a train or on a bus,
right,
or in a taxi, and I don't think that that has made those options attractive to people. Secretary Steinman.
The biggest issue, though, is that currently today, a train, a bus, they don't take you to the front door, where these vehicles will actually change how the city landscapes are set up. You'll actually have drop-off zones where it takes you to the front door, and you'll be able to get off, walk into work, and you don't have to figure out, okay, I got to get down to that bus stop before that bus gets there. You know, I'm at the train station. Now I've got to go catch a cab. It takes away the additional linkage that has to happen today that really is the inconvenience that most people don't want to do or deal with.
Right.
So that's the opportunity, is that this allows more direct connect. And it's really going to come down to a cost-benefit ratio. I mean, as an engineer, if I can use rideshare and I don't have to worry about getting my oil changed, maintain my vehicle, this, that, and the other, and that cost-benefit is a situation where I can look at it and say, I can do this rideshare and actually save my family money, and I can put that money into a trip to Wyoming or wherever I want to go. It has a whole different concept of how America can see the world. And I think that's going to be what's going to be the difference in this piece. It's no different than when cell phones first came out. I know my dad looked at me and said that over his dead body, would he ever carry a cell phone? Even though I bought him a phone and gave him a plan, it was always dead in a drawer someplace. But the newer generation is expecting this.
Mm-hmm.
And my 25-year-old son, who is a computer engineer, we can't do this fast enough. He keeps asking me, what's taking us so long to get there?
Right, so. Right. Nidhi, what about people who drive for a living?
Professional driving is one of the last sources of sort of stable income that you can have without necessarily having a higher education. And particularly in the mood and the concerns that we find ourselves today, that question of what does this mean for professional driving jobs should be at the top of our policy agenda, even though often we treat it as though it's a cursory issue or a by the way or if you want to make an omelet type of thing. But I think that this is an extremely serious issue. It always has been. Automation is a source of job loss. It has been for a very, very, very long time. But this is such a clear example. And the challenge is the benefits of autonomous vehicles are widespread. Anyone and everyone can have a part of that experience, assuming the costs are low and the availability is there. So that's a great thing. But unfortunately, the people who may lose out because of this technology are some of our less well-off, more vulnerable people. And they will feel these effects acutely, and many of them won't be able to find other jobs or not jobs that don't pay as well or provide the stability that they might need. And so I think this is a real concern.
I think it's probably the number one issue that's on kind of our minds is we know this technology is coming. We also know that in 29 states, truck driving is the number one job.
Hmm.
And truck driving looks very different in 2035 than it looks in 2017. I can tell you that. And so we need to be thinking about this. I think this is probably the number one transition that you and I are going to see in our lifetimes.
We're not going to put the genie back in the bottle. You know, right now, most accidents are blamed, as you said, on driver error. So what happens when there's no driver and every accident, every fatality becomes the fault of the manufacturer? I mean, how can any manufacturer bear that liability?
Well, I think you're already starting to see multiple manufacturers kind of stepping up and saying, look, if it's our technology that's actually caused the problem, we'll take responsibility for the accident. But I think it also shows their confidence in their technology. And so, I mean, I think it's a policy question about how much safer it needs to be. But I think it's also interesting to note that whatever minimum level we set, they will only get exponentially better than a human driver once we set that minimum level. So in January, they might be four times as safe as a human driver. But because they're gathering all this data and actually learning and getting better every day, they might be 20 times as safer the next January.
We should mention, I think there's an accident that's on everybody's mind when they think about this, which was that Tesla Model S up in North Florida. It was on autopilot, and the driver, the man died when the car couldn't distinguish between the white side of a tractor trailer that cut in front of him and the sky, and it didn't apply the brakes, and he went into it, and he died. And recently, the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration just ruled that Tesla was not responsible for that. Paul?
You need to understand, though, that these vehicles are set up with redundancy now. I mean, it used to be that it was you're just solely going off cameras or you're solely going off GPS. And now they have redundant systems in them. So if one fails, they have a backup system. And then two, that vehicle, at this point, we don't have vehicles talking to each other yet because there isn't the density of autonomous technologies out there. As there more and more autonomous vehicles come onto the roadway, those vehicles will be talking to each other. For example, if that truck had been autonomous, it would have announced itself to the Tesla, so the Tesla would have known that it was there, and it wouldn't have been solely running off the cameras. And so the glare from the sun wouldn't have been a contributing factor to that issue. So as there becomes more and more of these vehicles on the roadway and the vehicle-to-vehicle interface starts happening, that, again, increases that safety factor that everyone's looking for, along with the fact that it's extremely redundant. When Audi was here back in 2014, what they were here testing was that exact concept. If their cameras or any of their systems failed, how would it transition to their backup system, whether it was the GPS that failed and it went to the cameras or the radar or the LiDAR? They were actually testing that on the Selman when they were here.
So the Selman Expressway is being used to test autonomous vehicles.
The reversible lanes on the Selman is known as another one of the test tracks that USDOT recognizes for autonomous technology. And when they do that, they basically shut it down to other traffic so that they can use the reversible lane segment to test autonomous technology, and they can set up scenarios and whatever they're looking for to test that. And Audi came in 2014 and spent a good part of a week here testing their technologies. And I believe they've been back a couple other times. But
I don't think a lot of people know that all this testing of this technology is going on around them.
It's happening it's happening all over the place. I mean, every time a Tesla gets on the road and a driver puts it in autopilot, it's sending information back to Tesla. And it's getting that algorithm better, that software better.
Florida DOT is also one of the few DOTs in the country that holds an autonomous vehicle summit every year. This is our fourth year running. We had the first year in Tampa. Year four was here in Tampa. And we are looked at as one of the leaders in the country from a DOT perspective that is working with the industry to help implement this technology and figure out how the infrastructure needs to work with this technology.
One more question for you, Secretary Steinman, is Florida Department of Transportation really thinks this could ease congestion on the roads?
Oh, most definitely, because there's a lot of different aspects of autonomous technology that will help, for example, a lane on the interstate. It's 12 foot wide. It's not because we need it 12 foot wide. It's because from an engineering perspective, we put a 1 foot shy distance either way from centerline so that the human driver can basically sway in their lane so that they don't hit each other. Mm-hmm. These autonomous technology vehicles, they literally will track centerline to the centimeter. And so you can narrow lanes. You can also shorten the spacing between vehicles because of the technology that they have. They can run closer. You were talking about trucks. Platooning trucks is something that we could do, and you could actually increase freight mobility, and you could run more trucks at night when the interstates are more open and have these trucks platoon to help the movement of goods and services throughout our state and throughout the country. There's all kinds of different ways that this technology is going to change how our roadways look. When you stop and think about it, if we go 100% autonomous, you don't need road signs. Road signs are really for the human driver because the autonomous vehicle don't look at the signs when they're even today. So there's a lot of different things that you could do with our roadways to more effectively utilize what we currently have on the ground moving forward once this technology gets more readily adapted by society and there's more vehicles on the roadway.
That's Paul Steinman with the Florida Department of Transportation. We've also been speaking with State Senator Jeff Brandis, a Republican from St. Petersburg, and Nithi Kalra, a senior information scientist with the RAND Corporation. Thank you all so much for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
And we'd love to hear from you. Comments are welcome at WUSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters link, or you can tweet us at Florida Matters. Our show is produced by Stephanie Colombini. Our engineer is Craig George. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.